Hey witches, it's Courtney. This episode was recorded at Sunfest and we were without our normal equipment. One of our guests, Gavin, came out a little quiet in some sections. We fixed it as best we could, but you still may want to turn up your volume in a couple of areas as what he has to say is great and you don't want to miss it. Thanks all, enjoy!
The path of the witch is so unique.
The gift of witchcraft.
I was able to see, hear, and communicate with spirits.
A very personal relationship between a person and spirit.
Carnal lust and fun things like that.
Working with different energies. The spirits and communicating,
creating magic,
powerful ritual, and powerful spell.
She's actually sticking me in the cauldron.
The role of the witch is to make change.
Blessed be, yo.
Blessed be.
People ask me, like, okay, I'm a witch and I don't know what to do.
20 years ago, three young friends realized they were witches.
They scattered to different parts of the world following magic and spirit.
Now, they're back in their hometown to share what they've learned.
Welcome to That Witch Life Podcast, your home for living as a witch in today's world.
Am I hosting this one?
You are hosting
this
one.
Okay, well, I'm hosting this one. Okay.
Now that's going to be our intro this time.
That's how you should start.
Welcome to joining us at
Welcome
that
to
Witch
joining
Life.
Us.
Yes. Well, people are listening. They're joining.
Welcome to joining us.
We are exhausted. We are on day 4 of Sunfest Festival with Janet and Gavin. We've had an amazing time. As I said, we're exhausted. So if we sound exhausted, it's because we've been camping and at festival for 4 days now.
And, you know,
and that's a lot.
And I didn't even think to print off a bio on these two. So, for those of you who aren't familiar with Janet Fair and Gavin Bone, they're the author of many books on witchcraft. A lot of people recognize Janet from A Witch's Bible, and which is a book that has started a lot of people on the path. Most recent books include The Inner Mysteries and Lifting the Veil, and they travel around the world. And for some reason, they came here and are in a trailer with us at Sunfest, and Kanani's hosting, so you should start asking them questions.
I should. So,
I can't guarantee you're going to get answers.
There you go. Well,
so this show is also called Inside Kanani's and Courtney Weber's Head.
That's right. It's a terrifying place to be, so you're very brave.
We're also missing Hillary, so the sanity that's usually part of the show is not there.
Yeah, usually the balancing
sick,
element.
Poor thing. So, yeah.
So how was your guys' trip out here? You guys haven't been to the West Coast for a very,
long,
very long time.
Long. It was a long walk.
I want a time machine. Yeah. Where are you, Doctor Who, when you're needed?
Yes, it was a long walk across the Atlantic.
Yes. Yeah. We came on that famous Irish airline, Canalinga.
So one of the fun things that happened this weekend that a lot of people may not know is that this has been a very cool weekend for me in particular because of the fact that my first pagan event was at Harvest Home Gathering in Connecticut.
Sorry, I'm taking my clothes off.
All right. It started.
That's all true.
And it started. And that was my first pagan festival. Janet and Gavin were the ritualists at that very first festival. And that is where I met, that's where Courtney and I went for the first time, or I went for the first time. And I met Isabel, who's a great friend of ours, and I've loved ever since. And she actually flew out for this with her own children. I have my children, and it's almost like a deja vu feeling, only it's 14 years later and everything is different, and we're old now. And
speak for yourself.
I know, you guys are fabulous. I feel old now, and it's just been amazing. And I was so captivated by Gavin back in 2005.
He's mine!
And I know, and I thought he was so fabulous that later, when I ended up having my own children and I had a son that was coming, I thought, you know, I've always liked that name, Gavin.
Mine. I don't care about
Gavin.
The rumors. It's not true.
That's right. And so Big Gavin and Little Gavin met.
And we made them t-shirts with a TARDIS on it. And Little Gavin's says Gavin Today. And Gavin Bone's shirt says Future Gavin.
I don't get that.
He doesn't get it. Well, it's like Little Gavin.
I'm into time paradox, but I don't get it.
Well, he's the time traveler, and he meets himself in the future, which is you. So you're Future Gavin.
You're
Have you got him on suicide watch?
Oh, my God! Look, I don't like to say anything, but as I'm married to Gavin,
really gonna damage
this is a big problem.
That's really going to damage him. If he's,
I can't look at him at that age and say, hello, husband.
Hello, tiny husband. I'm his future self. He's in real trouble.
Well, he has time to change everything. It's time to fix it.
Tiny husband. We hadn't thought of that. Poor Janet.
Oh my God, my hair's getting short.
It's my husband, only tiny.
Well, one of the questions we often ask guests, which would probably be very interesting to our listeners, is how did you know that you were witches? Would you be willing to each share your story of how you knew?
How did I know I was a witch?
Yes.
Because I was a Sunday school teacher. And I went in to rescue somebody because I knew all about witchcraft. And it's true. It is all about sex and drugs and rock and roll. And I realised what I've been missing. No, but seriously. Do you mind, Courtney? I was a good girl back then. I didn't smoke, I didn't drink, and I was a virgin. So fuck off.
She's got potty mouth.
I've got potty mouth. Yeah. No, actually, seriously, though. I don't know. I really honestly don't know. I think it's something we just wake up to one day. Mm. It's not like we think, oh, I've woken up today and I'm a witch. It kind of happens slowly. And then you look back and you think, I don't ever remember not being a witch. I'm a Wiccan by my religion, but I'm a witch. It's funny, actually, on a serious note, all this thing that you hear these days of people arguing, you know, about the word witch and Wicca and all this sort of stuff. The witches, ages ago, people like Doreen Valiente, stated publicly they were witches. Wicca was their religion, but they were witches. So when I hear people going, well, I'm a Wiccan, but I'm not a witch. Oh, whatever. I find it, you know, it's the pedantics that people get into, you know, the headspace. And it's like they just can't think out of the box. They put themselves in this little compartment and they live in there. And I just give up in the end.
Well, with me, I think it was my first swimming lesson when I discovered I could float.
God!
Okay! That's okay. A new answer.
That's for the Monty Python fans.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm a
so.
Witch.
Who'd you knew she's a witch? She's turned me into a newt. I got better. Anyway, it was when I grew the big long nose. And actually, I just got later on, it was a carrot.
We are losing listeners as we speak.
We're losing coherence here. Okay, so what happened to me? I had a rather interesting upbringing. My mother was a converted, lapsed Roman Catholic. She went to, actually, it was a friend dragged her to a Catholic church, and she really liked the ritual. My mother was also always into tarot and medium, so I was used to her going off and coming back, and there was a woman called Mrs. Clare. She used to go and see. It was a psychometric medium. So we always had interesting discussions, like von Daniken's Chariots of the Gods and nature of religion, etc. And I remember going with my mother to this unexplained festival, which covered everything. It's the first time I ever heard of Roswell. Yeti, Bigfoot, Surrey, Puma, ghosts, the whole thing. So I even collected a magazine series about it. So I sort of had that background, the very open attitude to religion in the family. So I then finally reached that point where about 16, 17, where I start to find, you know, is there a God? So I went to St. Jude's, which makes absolute sense when you think about it, because he's this patron saint of lost causes. So that's the first church I went to. And I just didn't like the hypocrisy. This tramp walked in and sat at the back. And everybody was doing the creed and shaking hands, and everybody ignored him. It didn't make sense. Christianity never made sense to me. So I started, as I read things about different religions, there were bits that made sense to me, and I said, yeah, that makes sense. So, for example, reincarnation from Buddhism, because everybody knows energy cannot be created or destroyed, it just transforms. The idea that deities, Hinduism, were represented natural forces, etc., Taoism, polarity. And there was this really unique idea I came up with myself. I don't think anybody's ever written about it before. And everything is connected by a big web. Or so I thought I was the only one who had this idea. And the whole vibration and cause and effect. And as I discovered later on, that's the Anglo-Saxon concept of weird. So I put all these ideas together. And, well, being young and 16, 17 and hormones a go-go, there was this book club called Encounters. And the only reason I joined it was because you got these free books when you joined, and one of them is the Boris Vallejo books, the artist Chris Akilos, which generally consists of scanty clad women in leather riding dragons, which went, oh, I'll have them. So I got those and then discovered, oh, bugger, now I've got to buy a book every quarter. And the next book was Doreen Valiente's ABC of Witchcraft. By this stage, I was already going to the Spiritualist Church.
He only bought the book because my bum was on the cover.
Dad's bum was on the cover. In this cornfield. Now, she's got a story about that later on, but...
I'm not telling you about that cornfield. You know what happened.
Where the corneas ended up. Anyway, that boggles your imagination.
It wasn't corn. It was barley up the... Oh, I didn't say that.
So, I got Dawn Valiente's ABC of Witchcraft, and I read through it, and, oh my God, this woman's a Gavinist. There was all my beliefs in it. And then I had a word, which has been problematical ever since, that I was a witch, I was a Wiccan. So there I was, I knew what I was, and I sort of started practicing by myself. And I'd already been doing that, because I was in a little bike club, and every time people had a falling out, I had this statue of the Buddha, and I'd take a piece of string and a knot for every person, and I'd tie it together, and it was very natural to do it. So that's really how I knew I was a witch. And the warts. It was the warts.
Started turning green.
And suddenly this broomstick appeared in my bedroom.
Actually, no, green. Seriously. His mother was snooping around.
And although initially
she saw something in his bedroom. Yeah. It was white powder.
And she thought it was cocaine. It was salt. Her nose stung for ages.
You know what? It's funny because once I was burning sage in my bedroom and my mom thought I was smoking pot. And so it's just like, yeah, another time when yeah, and I'm not sure even Gavin, I told you my story, but my story was similar in that
this is about us. Go away. Nobody wants to know about this.
You're right. I'm leaving. It's no longer That Witch Life. It's the Janet and Gavin Show.
That's right.
What was it called? Let Courtney speak.
Well, no, but it's I thought that I was a Courtneyist, and then when I read Raven Grimassi's book, The Wiccan Mysteries, and I went, oh, actually, I'm a Wiccan. There is a word for this, so that's something that's interesting.
Yeah. So, and of course, the whole thing with that word, because initially, oh yes, witch and Wiccan, and how people related to that word were very, very different back in the 80s, back in the early 80s.
How was it different?
Well, first of all, there was this statement that went around, which was basically... all witches are pagans, but not all pagans are witches.
Correct, yep.
And that was fine. And then that sort of changed in the 90s to the fact that all Wiccans are witches, but not all witches are Wiccans. Somewhere along the line it changed. And see, people seem to forget the origins of the word Wicca, which was one of the problems. And that actually it's an Anglo-Saxon word. And the word witch preceded Wiccan.
And Wicca is not pronounced correctly.
Actually, sorry, the word witch, Wicca, preceded initially... witch. And what happened was this.
It's pronounced Wisher.
It was originally Wisher, and there is actually, and we have some photocopies of the pages from the very old dictionary from the late 1700s, where those words are there and how it's pronounced. But it's probably even from that dictionary where Gardner got the concept. And two C's were soft. And what happened was is that the, of course, the single C is the Celtic K you come across in Q Celtic. And the reason that was adopted is Gardner wanted to desperately make Wicca look slightly Celtic rather than anything Germanic because it was post-Second World War.
Oh, interesting.
Right. And so the only person who really... So Wicca originally was used with only one C. And you'll see that in the early... You'll even see that in the early Buckland books. People used the C because he knew that was the hard C. And so you have this etymology of the word. And this is important. So you started off in the Anglo-Saxon with Wisher and Wishe, which is the masculine and the feminine. And then it became Wisha. A W got put in. So it eventually became W-Y-C-H. And eventually a T got put in and you got that early word, witch. So witch actually derives... from the origins of the word Wicca. But Wicca now has become a word unto itself, which is important to remember. So for me, calling myself Wiccan was never really a problem. It didn't mean I was Alexandrian or Gardnerian for that reason. Although everybody seemed, now it's all, oh yes, you're British traditional if you use the term Wiccan. That got me some strange looks sometimes, because I would say I'm Wiccan and everybody assumed I was Gardnerian or Alexandrian. Mm-hmm. I said no. But that's because there was this sort of, like, in England back in the 80s, there was this sort of small group who used the term Wicca, but weren't that. But we were small. Okay, that was a bit seriousness.
No, it's all right.
It happens once in a while.
I think one of the things that's important, and I think it's good to kind of talk about that stuff, is because people can get very hung up on titles and... Oh, well, you said this. Well, now I know what that
Here's
means.
Where I bang
and they
my,
start to put
I'm now
going to
bang my head against
boxes.
The table. And I bang my head against the table regarding that term, British traditional witchcraft or Wicca. The reason being, that came out of a book, and there were actually two terms used in it. British traditional witchcraft and American traditional witchcraft. Right? Nobody uses ATW.
No.
And what happened is it all got jumped on BTW.
You know what they say in Britain?
And it became...
It's not British, it's not traditional, and it's probably not Wicca.
Because they don't need to use the term British. They know they're British, right? They actually drink real tea, for example. you know? They didn't dump... They've never actually put too much water in their tea, which is what Americans do. It's a tradition here ever since the Boston Tea Party. You now have this strange thing as... People who are British traditional witchcraft in America trying to push it onto people in Britain, and they go, they're scratching their heads. They're scratching their heads. Oddly, here in America, you see it certainly, not in all Gardnerians and Alexandrians, but in many of them, it's become very reactionary. It's become much more closed off, more rigid, which is a real shame. And I'm not saying that's all of them, but even those that aren't have to keep their mouth shut about what they're really doing.
When I came into the craft in 1970, I was an Alexandrian. I lasted in that coven 1 year before Alex decided Stuart and I had to go and run our own coven. And that's when we met Doreen Valiente. Well, I'm not Alexandrian. I gave that up years ago. Apart from anything else, okay, the Gardnerians are going to be upset by this because, you know, poor old Doreen was a Gardnerian. But she and I were best friends. She dropped the Book of Shadows, just dumped it. She worked her magic out there in the woods with nature, in the New Forest. She was very down to earth. She hated her own literature of the charge because she said, I'm fed up with people picking up pieces of paper and reading it. She said, it wasn't meant to be like that. It was only meant to be used as a last resort if the goddess didn't come through and speak to you. So she was very practical, very down to earth lady. So... By the time, you know, I got to know Doreen very well, and people said, well, you are Alexandrian. You were initiated by the King of the Witches. Well, for a start, he wasn't my King of the Witches.
Well, I didn't vote for him.
Yeah, I didn't vote for him. And secondly, on top of that...
he wasn't covered in shit.
I looked at a lot. I mean, I have to be honest, a lot of the stuff that you see in Our Witch's Bible was not created by Gardner and not created by Saunders. It was created by Stuart Farrer. You know, he was the midwife to the craft. There's any other way you can put it.
Doreen gave... Right.
Doreen was the mother.
Gerald was the father. And Stuart was the obstetrician. Basically, he pulled the baby out and started smacking its bottom. That's the best way to describe it.
And I'll be honest, both... Well, I mean, I think with Alex, he wanted to be very traditional. He was actually a Gardnerian. He was initiated by a renegade Gardnerian priestess. But, of course, he started his own Alexandrian tradition. And both Gardner and Saunders were men with major faults. Gardner, I'm sorry, was a dirty old man. And Alex, well, he knew he had to get publicity. How better can you get publicity than nubile young ladies running around for cameras? By the time I got to know Doreen, I know people, you know, they look in the Witch's Bible and say, well, there's naked photos of you, Jan. And I go, yes, but that was over 30 years ago. And by the time I was in my 40s, I much preferred keeping warm in a British climate. Yeah. You know, if I'm going to work magic, I'm going to put on woolly sweaters and things.
It was a different time period, and you needed the people with the egos. Because otherwise, it wouldn't have got pushed forward. So there's a guy called Fred Lamont. He's still alive. He's very, very old. He was one of the original Gardnerian initiates. And he said something very, very interesting. He said, I was wondering why the goddess chose Alex Sanders and Jill Gardner, both very flawed men, to bring back the religion of the goddess. And he said, I think it was because they were flawed so that people wouldn't put them on a pedestal. And that you needed those egos to push things forward. Right? And yes, they were very flawed. And they were really no different to each other and what they got up to. Gerald, for example, Gerald Gardner, you'd be having a circle in the woods and there'd be these flashes of light. And it turned out he'd called the press and the press were in the woods taking photos of the circle. Or, for example, the Book of the Law, which came into Gardnerian, came about quite simply at the insistence of Dorian Valiente, because Gerald Gardner, even though taken over secrecy, was giving out people's names and addresses to the press. And they would get these phone calls. Hello. Dr. Gerald Gardner gave me your phone number. You're a witch, aren't you? I'd like to interview you for the Daily Express. This is what was going on. I'll be absolutely blunt. If you had these people turn up now and say, we're witches and we're forming a coven, we'd look and go, oh my God, we don't want these people around. This is what we'd say now. And you also have to remember, you have your average person who's been in the craft for now 5 years has considerably more knowledge than the pair of them put together. The amount of information people have when they come into the craft now is so more freely available than it was back in the 50s and 60s. And even in the 80s, I remember going into bookshops, occult bookshops. Sensible books on witchcraft, you'd find four copies, and it was always the same names. It was always Buckland. It was always Janet Stewart's were coming in. You'd have Leo Martello. And then you'd have these really awful books by people like Montague Summers, Paul Hewson. And that was really it. And then suddenly, you get these more books come in. Dorian Valiente, Janet and Stewart. And it was Dorian Valiente's and Janet and Stewart's which were really the more sensible books that started to come in, which were more informative. And that's why The Witch's Bible, which is still selling after 30 years.
It was quite funny, actually, because...
Beginner's book, by the way.
Stuart and I... Yeah, it was a beginner's book.
It's a beginner's book.
Oh, absolutely.
Stuart and I, in 91, came and did this big three-month tour of America, and, you know, we talked to Doreen about it, and she went, what's all this rubbish when they go around calling people Lord this and Lady that? I said, well, I'm no lady. I'm trash like the rest of them.
I still remember,
you know,
somebody referring to Stuart and said...
Doreen told me, she goes, it's a load of rubbish, isn't it? She said, it's like these people who put plonkers on their heads and call themselves kings and queens of the witches. It's rubbish.
I remember somebody saying to Stuart, oh, Lord Stuart, Lord Stuart, I'm not a lord, I work for a living. I mean, British culture is very different. The whole lord and lady thing came out of two places. One was Monique Wilson, who was French-Vietnamese, and she always wanted to be nobility. So she started the lady thing. And, of course, in America...
She was hated by the other Gardnerians.
Yeah, for it. The other thing is it seeped... Of course, she was the line that started everything going through Buckland and States. And, of course, also some of it seeped in from the SCA. Because there's always been this sort of crossover with that sort of culture of reenactors sometimes. Not everywhere, but often.
Well, I have another question. And this relates to a story.
You're ever so pretty. I think I like you.
All right, Kanani, you're next. They're clearly not going to listen to me. Okay. Yeah, I'll come back to mine
okay,
later.
Okay, Courtney, we'll be quiet for 5 minutes.
Okay, what, Courtney?
We won't, no, go, we won't
Courtney.
Say a thing.
No, go, Courtney.
They're making horrible faces. I can't do this. So I was doing a wedding for a couple when I was living in New York City. And they wanted to do their wedding ceremony based on a witch's Bible. And it was becoming very complicated, and they were doing, it was a very small wedding, and it was taking place at a restaurant in Brooklyn. But then I was trying to say, you know, you don't have to use all these accoutrements. Trust me, Janet would say it was fine. Trust me. I didn't know Stuart, but Janet would say it was fine. And then he said, okay, good. My other concern is being naked in front of our parents at the wedding ceremony.
That's when I would have choked on it.
And I said, I guarantee you Janet wants you to wear your wedding clothes and you can get naked when you're alone with your bride later. But, and all this. So I had a hard time convincing him to elaborate and do what he wanted to do in his own wedding ceremony.
It's sacred bookism.
Yes.
Yes.
And
yes.
This is the problem, is that... And a lot of coming into the craft is actually undoing the things you've been taught about religion. And it's very noticeable, for example, that the Book of Shadows became a replacement for the Bible, or the Quran, or the Torah, depending on your religion, because you must have a sacred book. And it's basically a witch's notebook. And I remember a similar experience we had in Ireland, and it was this New Age event in Ireland, and somebody we knew was going, said, oh, would you like to come and talk? And we said, sure, and I'll have a word with the committee. And we didn't hear anything, so I wrote, and they said, oh, they don't want you to come. Why? Well, they're a bit concerned about you doing rituals naked. What? They don't want you there taking rituals, you're doing rituals naked. I mean, I wanted to go because some guy was going to try and channel King Arthur, you know, and I thought, wow, that's going to be fascinating, trying to channel King Arthur. I mean, what the hell is going to happen? It's like invoking King Arthur and a pile of bones turns up. So that's why I really...
Look at the bones, man, the bones!
So, no, this is... It's that sacred bookism, where people get into this dogmatic attitude, and it spreads over into books on witchcraft. If it's by Janet Farrow and Gavin Bone, it must be true. These are ideas. These are guidelines. We're all still learning. But that's the biggest problem. And we had this major problem where people used to put us on a pedestal. And we could have gone off having on a messianic kick. Hell, we could have started a cult. Damn it, I wish I had. We'd now be really wealthy. But unfortunately, I've got morals, which gets in the way. So, it was. I still remember it. We reached a point where Janet started to decide she was jumping off the pedestal and screw everybody. And I still remember at MIT, doing a talk in Boston at MIT for the pagan community, pagan group there. And it's in an auditorium. And Janet says, I'm now going to teach you a sacred Anglo-Saxon word of power. And everybody goes, oh. And Janet goes, repeat after me, fuck! And everybody goes, what? Well, come on then, say it. And that's what Janet does. And this is really where it started, because otherwise, I remember getting ego rubbed by people. And I'd had a bad experience with that.
Can I rub your little ego? Yeah. It's ever so sweet.
It's a small ego, just there below.
Oh, oh!
I also have one just below my belt.
He did not say that.
So,
is that a small ego too?
You know, you should discuss the Order of the Bad Toad. Courtney is a member.
Yes.
Sorry, that's a secret, isn't it?
Yes, not anymore, I guess.
No. So Janet started the Order of the Bad Toad, which was you don't take yourself seriously. And I still remember it was actually this part of the country. It was actually north in Washington State where we had done that, and these people caught up with us from another festival. And these guys were part of EEC, the Electric Eclectic Eleusinian Coven. And they presented me, Janet and Stuart with these amazing fluorescent robes with like triangles and circles on a black background. And they gave Janet, and we still have it, a little pedestal with a toad on. As saying, we know you don't want to be put on the pedestal, but we're going to put you on a little one anyway.
Which is cute.
Really nice. So, if people come up to us and try to be pompous and treat us as though, you know, we're the ones, then we basically find a way of dealing with it rather rapidly. You can't communicate with people unless you're on the same level. If you're up on a pedestal, you have to shout and they can't hear you. Simple as that. It's basic what's called transactional analysis, right? So you have to be on the same level as people. You have to get off the pedestal and say, look, here I am, I'm going to roll in the mud with you. I screw up like the rest of you.
I don't screw up.
Janet doesn't screw up.
I've never screwed up.
She does fart a lot.
Oh, fuck off.
I had an interesting experience where early on I actually ran a coven. And I was initiated through Brige, and it was funny because my coven ended up being all mothers, even though I had yet to have children, and everyone in my coven was mothers. And so it was very women child centered.
And I had a friend, and you could tell that she just wanted to grasp anything. And she was in such a desperate place that I would try and share things with her, but she was so... She wanted someone to spoon-feed her something.
Mm-hmm.
And she had no ability to self-reflect or to think about what she was doing. And so I was always very hesitant to really allow her to be much in the process because she wasn't thinking about what she was doing. She wanted someone to tell her what to do and how to do it. And then she was going to, you know, treat it like gospel. And then she was going to treat you like you were, you know...
It's an important thing.
Goddess telling you exactly what to do. And I was just like, you need to be able to control yourself and think about yourself.
The only person who can teach your craft is yourself.
Exactly.
Okay. People can guide you. You can get ideas from them. But in the end, you have to teach yourself. You have to basically study yourself. Be willing to learn. Then you have to reach a point with the learning where you're opening up. And listening to that little voice coming through, which hopefully is coming down through the divine, which will eventually reach a point where you get guidance and you start to get intuitive ideas. Many of the stuff I've put in books has come that way. And it's quite fascinating because I remember when we were doing Lifting the Veil and my publisher's going, where did you get that from? I said, what do you mean? This is what Cora and Victor Anderson taught. I said, well, no, I mean, this is the stuff I was working on. I was looking at stuff, and it just came through to me that this... He said, well, that's what they used to teach. But sometimes things are true.
Right.
Simply. And they appear. And it was a truism that I had come across. And this is what happens. And eventually you reach the point. And what we do with a lot of our students, we say, hey, you need to connect with deity. When you connect with deity and you get that intuitive flow... Most of the notes I have from my original book, A Shadow, are on nursing evaluation paper because I started doing these walking meditations. And there I am trying to get somebody on dialysis and all this stuff starts flooding in my head. And the only piece of paper I had was nursing evaluation paper, so I'm breaking, scribbling all this down. And it's still there at the back of my book of shadows in between who's got to have an enema and... oh, I'm doing a prostate examination on this person today. I'm in between Canunos and fertility rites and stuff. So this is what you got to do.
One of the things that I thought was, that I always thought was interesting and I never quite understood. And one of the first terms that I heard was, they would call them IRAB pagans. And it was, I read a book, pagans. And I never understood, myself, when I was starting out, I was like, why is that a bad thing? You want people to read and you want people to study and stuff like that. But then what I learned was it was people who, they read the books and then they just regurgitated what they read in the books.
Yeah, but
not they read the books and then had their own experiences and then created...
Digested it
and then it became a part of what they did. Instead, they literally read it like you would read a textbook. And then would recite it like a textbook when they aren't actually experiencing any of these things or practicing any of these things in their own regard. They're just reiterating something they read off of a piece of paper.
Yeah, I remember having a conversation with somebody. I'd come to the conclusion, because certainly in the 80s, all you had were books and you read. So yeah, I was an IRAB. A lot of people started off as IRABs.
Yes.
Okay. A lot of people started off as fluffy bunnies.
Yep.
Always remember fluffy bunnies. That sharp, pointy teeth. And they'll get you. Okay? So I don't like the term fluffy bunny much as well. So many people started off as fluffy bunnies. So...
I mean, like, and sort of people that aren't familiar with that term, it's like love and light and all we want to do is heal and help and everything's sweetness and the goddesses...
Red and tooth and claw.
Yeah.
And you learn that.
If you're a real witch, you can cure and you can curse.
It's like a healer.
And sometimes you have to curse.
Healer can heal, but when the healer has that level to be able to heal, they can also kill. So no, I mean, you have these people who carry on that way. And again, we get back to the sacred bookism,
mm-hmm,
which
exactly.
is there. They don't learn to do the intuitive flow. And you see it, it's got less and less, but you used to see rituals where everybody had sheets of paper and it had to be word perfect. And I think if you're going to do a ritual where you read stuff off bits of paper, it should be toilet paper. Okay? Read it off biodegradable toilet paper. Right? You can have a roll and you can go.
Yeah, flush it, let it go when it's done.
Yeah. But we use what's called knowledge-based ritual, and that is basically this. Say, for example, you're going to do summer solstice. You just read everything you can on summer solstice. You get it into your head. You go, okay, I have a rough idea of what you're going to do. Maybe you write it down before you go, and you walk in and you do it.
Yep.
Some people call it winging it. But that's what we do now, and we teach our students. It's a longer process, but once they click, boy, then you've got the feeling. Because it's about head and heart. Too many people in their heads. And that's the thing. When we've travelled around the world, and we've been very fortunate to work with native cultures, Koori Aborigine, Transkei Lesotho Sangoma, the traditional healers, from our perspective, they're witches, genuine Native Americans. And the one thing when you come across these cultures, and they have had contact with witches, they say, why are European witches all in their heads?
Yeah.
Right, they're all in their heads. They say, what is it with all these words? Because they're not into the words. They just go and do it. And it's not about the words. So they meet these pagans and modern Western witches, and it's all blah, 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 blah. All these words come out and they go, what's all that about?
Yep.
I just point my finger and things happen. That's what you see. So again, it's that stuff being in the head. And our approach is head and heart. Basically, because in those native cultures, of course, from an early age, they're learning stuff continually by watching. We don't have that. So we have to fill all the gaps with the books and the written word. And of course, now the internet. And then you reach a point where you just are able to just go and do it. And that's what we mean by knowledge-based ritual.
Right.
And it works. It works. It flows. It takes a little practice because ritual is a skill. It's an art form. So this is what we do now. But there's nothing worse than being in a ritual where everybody's stammering over words.
And fussing with costumes.
Yes.
Right.
And making
but I can tell you there's also the reverse. And I saw the reverse happen where people had no idea what they were doing and tried to do it straight. And I, at one festival, this guy, he used to do this singing and use a staff. He was somebody I knew. And he raised this energy. He had no idea when he started a fight. People started brawling. Because he was using all this energy and it was very warrior. He didn't know how to direct it or anything, and bang, it was just chaos ensued because he didn't know what he was doing. So you can be too much in the heart and you can be too much in the head. It's got to be a balance.
I think that's something that Courtney and I have talked about a lot when we've talked to people about new to the practice and coming into practice, where people get very hung up on like you said, sacred bookism, where it's like, well, it says I have to have a red candle. It says the candle has to be red, and I don't have a red candle. What do I do? What do I do? And it's just like, is there another candle that you have that you feel would work? Well, yeah. I wanted to use, you know, purple, because I have this one, and I felt it would be really good, but it says I have to have red, and it's trying to get people to understand
People to understand that the most important
magical tool... It's so much more intuitive.
Yeah.
Most important magical tool is your head, your brain. Focus on the intuitive part
and not so much the like you said, the written, this is how it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah. It's what's the most important magical tool is that one between your ears. And everything comes from that. Everything else is basically a tool. Everything else is a prop. Okay, it may be consecrated a thame. It may have a reflection on the astral. That's fine, but it's even with that reflection on the astral, it's still just a tool. And with our students, they have to be able to cast a circle. Basically, if they can't cast a circle with their little finger, then they're not witches. Because all said and done, all this is about manipulation of energy. Right? So all the tools are really just a way of ritually manipulating energy. So of course, what we've done with our students is right from the start, they start directly with the energy, and then the tools come later. And the tools are very useful, then because again it's Pavlovian, it's learned response. They pick up the athame and cast a circle, and the energy just naturally flows. That's why you have the tools. So the energy work comes first, and of course, that's all stemming than visualization in the mind.
Absolutely. One of the things that I thought was wonderful with the ritual that you guys did this weekend was I've been to a handful of rituals in my life, and I was very spoiled by having your first ritual, the first ritual I attended, be one of yours that involved trance, that it makes other rituals, it's more like watching a play and less like feeling like experiencing a ritual. And you may get emotional about it and it might reach you, and a lot of people get very spiritual feelings involved, but rituals that really bring you where you're using your own intuition during the ritual instead of watching people perform something in front of you is an entirely separate experience.
Yeah.
And I have become much more particular about rituals I will attend because a lot of times I know that it's going to be more like watching a performance more than it is going to be like feeling like a ritual, because it is much more performance oriented. And so I feel like for a lot of people, this was a very big deal for them to experience that kind of a ritual where it was much more, they're experiencing something. They're not just watching something. Well, they're being taken to a different place.
Also, it's partly, I mean, as you know, yesterday, part of it is based on Greek theatre.
Mm-hmm.
And telling the myth, starting off a ritual by telling a myth and producing Greek theatre for them. Greek theatre was about education. It was about teaching people. And, okay, there are pagans out there, witches in that circle. Some of them wouldn't have known the myth. You know, they would have thought, well, what is this thing about the Oracle of Delphi, etc.? And, you know, what's this thing about, she gets so upset about stuff. Of course she's going to be upset. You know, she's going to live for over 1,000 years and yet still grow old. She's not going to be a happy camper, is she? But having used that, it gives them an idea of what to do. But at the same time, as I'm telling and narrating the story and it's being reenacted in front of them, I'm not sitting there with a book. And I'm performing things with my hands. I'm doing things like offering the wine, etc., to the ground, just letting it flow. And that's the thing. You should let ritual flow. It's supposed to flow.
Here's where I get onto my academic side and show off. So, Friedrich Nietzsche, okay, did a book called The Birth of Tragedy, and he analysed basically Greek theatre. Greek theatre has its origins in religion. All theatre has its origins in religion. And what Nietzsche did is looked at the two mainstreams, which were referred to, he refers to as Dionysian and Apollonian. Because the original theatre was just like that. It flowed. And it was slightly chaotic. And then there was the other extreme, which was Apollonian. And this is what we see today on the stages in Broadway, where it is all structured.
It's orchestrated, it's rehearsed. Right.
Yeah.
But there was something important that Nietzsche pointed out, and it's often ignored. Dionysian ritual must always have a seed of the Apollonian in it, where there must be a certain element of structure. Otherwise it becomes chaotic and out of control. And the same with the Apollonian. There must be a flexibility. Interestingly enough, this is what you see amongst British actors. Right? The way they're taught. A British actor will ad-lib. And the most famous example from was of the Kevin Costner Robin of Sherwood movie, because there is that bit where Rick, I've got his name, Rick, not Wakeman,
where Rick Mail?
No, where I can't remember his name, sorry, long weekend. It's where the actor who played the Sheriff of London,
Nottingham.
Sheriff of Nottingham, says, when I catch Robin of Sherwood, I'm gonna cut his heart out, and he forgot the word. There was a blank on the word sword, so he said spoon. And the other actor who played Guy Guzman said, do you know what to say? So he said, a spoon, my lord, surely you mean a sword. No, a spoon, it will hurt more. And it was completely ad-libbed, and Kevin Costner went, no, we're supposed to get in the script. And the assistant director knows said, no, that works.
Yeah, yeah, it's brilliant.
And so this is the thing, is the ability to be flexible. That's the Dionysian, the ability to be flexible with what is happening. But if you have a rigidity and you're going to do this ritual, and that's medieval ceremonial high magic, the Apollonian.
That was interesting with Sanders, by the way. Mm. If you went to any of Alex's rituals, he did the entire ritual himself, including the words of the charge, of Dorian's charge. You know, where he'd basically say, you know, whenever you have need of anything, once in the month, and better it be when the moon is full, etc. Maxie and his wife would just sit on a chair looking pretty. The ritual would last half an hour, that was it, and then it was over the pub. That was all that ever happened. Mm. People, you know, thought because they'd heard of him being king of the witches, the rituals must have been wonderful. No, they were incredibly boring. Yeah. And half the time, he had an audience of coppers, police from Scotland Yard sitting there watching it.
It was a whole, yeah, because Sanders saw himself as a ritual high magician, as much as a witch. And in ritual high magic, the words are important. You have to get the words right, you have to get everything right, you have to get the day right, the incense right. It's all about that. Because it came out of Christianity.
Right.
And what you people were doing is they had to use this whole complicated system to bypass what they had been taught in Christianity. And this is the thing you see now. When people came into witchcraft in the 60s, it was all very, very structured in ritual. For that reason, they still had these Christian upbringings, this Apollonian attitude. And that was necessary for them to bypass their Christian upbringings, because there was still that little voice at the back of their head saying, if you do this, a demon might appear. So they, as you see a growth process. The more people got over that, the more flexible the ritual became. And you can see it. It goes like that. It goes like a graph going up and a graph going down, where they reach a cross point where you get that balance.
One of the most... It shouldn't have been a shocking conversation, but it was a very jarring conversation for me. Was I had a friend who I knew that... Well, it's one of those ironic things where apparently he's very religious. He's very Christian. He never goes to church. He never does anything. But of course, he considers himself very, very religious. And he was asking me out of honest curiosity about my faith. And he knew that I was someone who helped put on Pagan Pride, and I was involved in all these different things. And I think at that time I was still running a coven. And so he's very, you know, curious. So he's asking me questions, and he says, he's just asking me all these random questions, and I'm trying to, you know, give him answers because he's being polite with his questions. And then finally he says, what do you believe is going to happen to you if you don't practice this? And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, well, what is your punishment if you don't practice this? And I looked at him, and I'm like, he grew another head, and I'm just like, then I drink some coffee and do something else? Like, I don't even know what you're talking about. And he goes, you don't feel like there's a punishment if you don't, you know, because like they fear going to hell.
Yeah, you must
and
go
I
to
said,
church.
Yes, and I said, you're a miserable no, sinner. He goes, well, what? And then he kind of gets kind of haughty with me, and he goes, well, what do you think of me? Because I don't believe in this. What do you think is going to happen to me? I said, I don't know. You're going to go on and do your own thing. He couldn't. His brain couldn't process the concept that I had no ill will towards him, or felt like anything horrific was going to befall him, because he didn't do exactly what I did. It was so bizarre for me.
It's the Christian original sin. So right from the start, they say you're born, therefore you have sin. So you're continually, basically, appeasing God for your faults. So you must go to church, because otherwise, for redemption. You must go to church for redemption. We sit in Ireland in the Catholic Church all the time. So people in Ireland, a lot of them with low self-esteem because of it, because they're miserable sinners. And it's where you get this odd thing of begrudgery in Irish culture if anybody achieves something, because how can this miserable sinner achieve that? So they use this term, which is they're a chancer. And that's how it's manifest in Catholic culture in Ireland. But yeah, it's so for them, the practice is redemption. But that's not the situation. The practice in witchcraft is to survive, and as time has gone on, enlightenment. Witchcraft has its origins in survival. Okay? People need to remember that. It was practical, it was earth-based, it was... And it's important to understand this regarding the practices. Is it goes back to the cave when people got ill from what they believed were evil spirits, and of course it's disease. So magic and medicine went together. So magic and medicine went together right in the past, and of course that carried on into the Greek period with Aesculapius, the god Aesculapius, gods associated with healing and medicine. This is what shamanism was. And witchcraft is just a development of shamanism. It develops from hunter-gatherer culture into early agriculture, and shamanism evolves into witchcraft in the broadest sense of the word. So you did stuff to survive, and if so, for example, you went and picked herbs to do healing, because we are a culture which is dependent on each other in our tribe and our family, because unlike any other primate, we learn to specialise. Particularly when you get into agriculture, we start to specialise. You can't afford to lose the blacksmith. If he dies, who's going to shoe the horses? So you must have somebody who specialises in healing to deal with that. Because healing is associated with illnesses caused by evil spirits, that person must communicate with spirits and with the gods. So that's where you have witchcraft. There's always a tradition of healing, for that matter. Because it comes into protecting the community as well. So witches were able to curse the enemies of the village. Actually, in Italy, people talk about that word strega. And actually, the traditional, what we would call white witches, were called the mascaia, the mascarate, the veiled ones, the hidden ones, which you have in Italy, who perform the same purpose. So witchcraft comes from necessity and survival. And this is what people forget. And the second thing is this evolution into being enlightenment is connection with divinity and serving it, understanding the universe, understanding the divine. But again, it's an earth-based enlightenment, understanding how the world works, which is why there is no, unlike Christianity, and you see this more and more prevalent in Christianity now, the basically rejection of science.
Yes.
It's always been there, right back to the monkey trial. With evolution. Witches can embrace evolution. That's the work of the Mother Goddess.
That's something that I've often... I remember one of my earlier covens, one of the witches was saying, well, I'm having a really hard time reconciling magic and science. And then one of the other witches said, well, just ignore science. And I said, no, don't do that at all. They don't negate each other.
No.
Not at all.
Quantum physics, quantum entanglement, that's bloody sorcery. I mean, look it up. You are talking about what they are doing is they are taking, for example, a bit of quartz or a bit of rock, they're cutting, slicing it, having one piece in the lab in one part of the country, one piece in another, bombarding it so it vibrates on a quantum level, and the other piece is reacting. Okay? Magic is just undiscovered science, which has become accepted within the culture. But I think, now I'm going to quote one of my favourite books, The Tao of Pooh. And the Tao of Pooh has a lovely statement. And Piglet says, What does science call it when birds fly south for the winter? And Pooh goes, oh, they call it instinct. Oh, right, okay, what does that mean? It means they don't know.
That's perfect. That's exactly right.
Yeah. They use a word to explain something they don't understand.
Why does it work?
There are scientists now who are having... We have this scientist in England called Richard Dawkins, and he tries to foo-foo anything he can't understand. And I'm waiting for a day that when he's on stage with a quantum physicist to rip him apart, because he hates anything to do with religion. Anything to do with spirituality or magic. It's all about being oppressive to science. For him, science is the religion. And you can go that way. Science,
yeah, some people go that way, absolutely. Yeah.
As well. they have this like faith in it. And there is a wonderful, I'm sorry, I'm a trekkie. There is an episode in Voyager, episode called Sacred Ground. And one of the crew members goes to this shrine on this planet and gets zapped. So the captain wants to basically save her. So they realise it must be something to do with the shrine. So she has to go through all the rites. And so she's read up on all these shamanistic rites and that, and she's going for all these rites. And the first, she has to go and meet the elders. So she goes into the little room and there's all these old people sitting around. And she goes, is this where I meet the elders? No, it's just where you sit. Oh. And in the end, she ends up just leaving the room, thinking it was part of the test. And she goes through all these trials which she's expecting. And during it, she has a trance and says, everything you've been through is meaningless. And she comes back to the ship and she thinks she has what she needs because she's got these sensors on her. And she uses it to try and revive the woman on the bed. And the doctor says, this data, it's all meaningless. And she goes, she gets like this spiritual click. And she goes back to the person who was taking her through the process and says, I don't know what's happening. Okay, let's start again. Goes back into the room. And the old people go, oh, you're back, are you? And she goes, well, yes, are you the elders? Oh, now we're the elders, says this old lady. Well, I don't know what I've got to do. Well, you've got to kill her. What? You've got to kill her. Now, this is a woman who was a scientist. And so you've got to bring her back and take her into the shrine. And she leaves, and you can see it's well portrayed. It's Kate Mulgrew. And she takes this woman, brings her down, and all the crew are trying to stop her. They don't understand what she's doing. And she walks into the shrine. She gets zapped again, and the woman comes back. And one of the people trying to stop her is a Chakotay, who is actually Native American. Because even he's not really quite sure what's going on here. And it's really fascinating. And you can see she's trying to comprehend what she's been through. Because she's tried to put science on it. And actually the elders are going, oh, you think you're wonderful with all your little gadgets.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful episode if anybody watches it.
That's a good... One of the stories that I overheard during the festival that Janet told, which I thought was a wonderful story in regards to, I feel like especially now we live in a time where people are very fractured and where there can be very us and them thought processes. And you were talking about how you are the witches for your community.
Mm.
And it's not just for the other people who practice Wicca or her Wiccans. And you gave the example of the farmer with his
cattle.
And I was wondering if you could give that story, because I feel like it's a beautiful example of what we should strive for.
Well, okay, both of us. Okay. Right, we live in a little cottage in County Meath in a little place called Kells. Now, down the road from us is an ancient site called Fore, F-O-R-E. And Fore is a funny little place. It's like a timeless...
It's a valley.
It's the valley of squinting windows down there. Well, anyway, one day along comes a farmer. Muddy old welly boots, smells of pig shit, bangs on the front door and says, are the witches in? Well, yes.
I'm not insulting you, am I? No.
And we said, well, you know, do you want to come in? And so, okay, he comes in, sits down. And Gavin, would you like to say what happened?
So we say, okay, what seems to be the problem? He says, oh, it's my cattle and my sheep. They're drowning themselves. Okay. Tell us what's going on. He says, well, they're walking up to the river on my land, they're sticking their heads in and they're drowning themselves. And I said, have you been to the vet? And he said, yes. Okay. What did he say? He doesn't know. I said, well, let me explain. Ireland got some fallout from Chernobyl. So he said, were you in the fallout area for Chernobyl? And he said, no, we were clear. Radiological board checked the area and they checked for radon gas. And we're fine. Okay, so what did the vet say? Oh, he had absolutely no idea, and he sent me to the parish priest. Okay, what did the parish priest say? Well, he had no idea. He sent me to you. Okay. So we said, right, tell me about where you live. And he said, well, I live in Fore, and I've got my land, and there's the abbey there. Behind that is a little hill. He said, oh, we'll have to go down and have a look. So we went down, and we went down along the river, and we could see where the cattle drown themselves. And there is Fore Abbey, and it's the abbey that doesn't sink because it's built on a bog, but behind it is this hill, surrounded by hawthorn, fairy thorns. So he went, oh. Now, it's also a sacred site. It's sacred to Christianity. So there are various things like the tree that can't burn and various little shrines. And what had happened was this. These born-again Christians had come to Ireland because from a born-again Christian viewpoint, Catholicism is heathen. So they decided they were going to reclaim this site for Christ. And they got up on top of this hill and they shoved crosses into the ground, which pissed off
The fairies.
Now, let me explain about fairies. They're not gossamer-winged things. They're sharp in teeth and claw. They are land spirits. They are amoral. And they basically... What happened was this. These people pissed them off. As far as they're concerned, man pissed them off. The cattle belong to man. Take it out on the cattle. Which is what they did. Okay? This is what happened. So what we had to do is do the rites up there. So we had to appease them. So you use bells. You make traditional offerings.
We tied green ribbons around all the trees, including a petrified tree that had not flowered for generations. Interesting thing is, a month later, that thing blossomed, which was wonderful. And we said to the farmer, right, let's do this in Christian terms, because he would have been a Christian. Do you believe in Saint Bridget? And he said, oh, yes, ma'am. Okay, and of course, that's the goddess Breed.
Of course.
So I said, right, okay, there are certain things you're going to have to bring up here onto the site. And he said, well, what's that? I want a pint of milk from your cattle. I want a pound of butter. And I want a good bottle of Jameson Irish whiskey. Now, his sister owned the pub. So he beetles off down into where his sister is, comes back about 20 minutes later, and he's got the butter, and he's got the milk, and he's got the whiskey. So he said, well, what do we do now? And I said, right, you have to do this. You're going to have to stand there and you're going to have to say, please, St. Bridget, protect my cattle. And then you place the butter on the ground. Okay. So he goes, please, St. Bridget, protect me cattle. And he puts the butter on the ground. Then I said, right, now you pour the milk on the ground and you say, please, St. Bridget, protect my cattle. Okay. Please, St. Bridget, would you protect me cattle? So he puts that on the ground. Then I said, now you have to pour the whiskey on the ground. Silence. All of it? Yes, all of it. Oh, but Jesus. Oh, that's good whiskey. All of it. Okay. Please, St. Bridget, protect me cattle. And grudgingly, he takes the top off the whiskey and tips it down quick. Mm. With a look on his face of, it's breaking me fecking heart. Well, anyway, a month later.
So I'm go back a month later, and we had put some ribbons on this one tree. It was a big old ash tree, okay? And we go walking back down, and it was covered in ribbons. And we thought, oh, that's interesting. We just put a few... No, nobody had ever put ribbons on it before. We put a few ribbons, and it's covered in ribbons. And we go back into the pub, known as the Seven Wonders, and we say... How long have people been putting ribbons on that tree? And Beezy runs up and says, oh, they've been doing that for generations. It's very easy to create a new tradition in Ireland. It's a meme. The moment it's like backward baseball caps. The moment you start hanging ribbons on a tree, other people start doing it. The next thing you know, the story goes around, it's been hundreds of years. The thing about being a witch in Ireland in the countryside, first of all, you're in the countryside. And if you really want to be alone, you need to live in a city. You can be alone in the city.
Absolutely.
You cannot be alone in a little village in the countryside. Everybody knows your business. So everybody right from the start knew that Janet and Stuart were witches, to the point where we would get mail addressed The Witch's Island and it would turn up on our doorstep.
No, brilliant. Joke,
that actually happened.
And even the parish priest came down one Christmas and said, I don't know what you lot do this time of year, but have a good one.
The thing about Irish Catholicism in Ireland is because its basis is really paganism. It absorbed so much paganism in Ireland. Like the holy wells and everything. So people are still believe there, particularly the land there It's an agricultural country, so they still believe in the spirits of the land, in the babe, she. You still have the stories being told. I'm past that. In the country areas. Not so much in the towns, but in the country areas. So if you're a witch, it's not a brick through the window. You might get a hardcore Catholic not like you. But on the whole, it's a knock on the door asking for help. And that means you've got to also look at the culture when you're working with them. So we're not like to say, look, go and work with the goddess Dani, or the Morrigan, or Breed. We would with Breed, because it's St. Bridget. We're basically going to say, look, work with the Madonna, or work with St. Bridget. For that reason.
What's funny, I think it's a similar... There's a similar concept that exists here, and it's not with the Fae, it's with ghosts. Mm. Christians have seemed to have reconciled the concept of... See, they wouldn't go to a witch... They would go to a psychic. Yeah. They seem to have been able to accept the concept of believing in a psychic and still maintaining their Christian values.
Because they're talking to angels.
Yes.
Which and also so have sharp pointy teeth and fangs.
They do.
Not necessarily gossamer winged creatures themselves. Because it exists. And so even they can't deny the existence, so they have found a way to kind of incorporate an acceptance level.
You can't ban that which doesn't exist. So if you have Christians saying there's a prohibition on speaking to oracles, it's because they believe in them.
Exactly.
It's not because they say they're not real, right? You can't ban... That's what something Rachel Pollack said in an interview. You cannot ban that which does not exist. So you're hosting. You have to wrap up.
Okay. Trying to think. There's like a million things I could think of to say.
How about one last question? I've got an idea.
Okay.
What would you say... to a newbie witch that says, I'm a witch, now what?
Oh dear, get a life.
Yes, important. It's important to carry on having a life, actually.
Yeah.
Rather than letting it take over.
That's the trouble, they let it take over. And then they become obsessed. Yeah. And my attitude is, get a life, go out, you're young, enjoy life. Yes, okay, you're going to be a witch, you're going to get initiated, you're going to go to rituals. But for God's sake, go down the bloody discotheque. Have sex with the boyfriend, whatever. But don't get hung up on just which. You know, you've got the rest of your life to get over that one. And believe me, one thing I would say to any young person, it's not an easy path. It's a tough one. You're going to get your heart broken. And it's not all about wearing pretty robes.
It's a path of service.
Get down, get dirty and serve the community.
Understand that it's a path of service. It's not egocentric. I mean, we all start off that way. Don't we really? We're just fascinated by all the glitzy bits. But it is a path of service. Read as much as possible. Be judgmental about what you read. Go, no, that makes no sense. That's crap. Don't take it on board as dogma. And just keep banging the rocks together.
Okay.
I think that's a good way to summarize kind of, I think that's what we try and get people to understand is, you know, do what makes you happy.
So our listeners, Jane and Gavin, are wonderful. They don't necessarily know what picks up on the microphone and what does not.
It's all right. I'll get the shampoo from the shower, Jen. Thanks.
Okay.
So, well, thank you guys.
We have to use shampoo on Courtney. I'm sorry, but I have to explain why the shampoo is important.
She's doing a very good impression.
She's absolutely filthy. You ought to see her feet. Oh, my God, and the smell's disgusting.
No, don't look at her. You'll turn to stone.
I took a nap in the woods because that's what witchcraft called me to do.
Yes.
I said the ritual, I went and I actually curled up and took a nap underneath a tree in a bunch of bushes.
Was it the witchcraft or the alcohol?
It was the witchcraft.
Oh, was it? Just checking. Yeah. Oh, no, that's not
just
before.
Checking. Yeah, the now is the night before. Well, thank you for joining us, and we're going to post a lot of resources and stuff on the website for things that you guys have mentioned that people might be interested in, but I think hopefully the people who do look at the resources and who listen to this also take to heart what you said, which is use your own intuition.
Yeah.
Put your own self into it and put heart into it. It's not just about reading, and it's not just about, you know, there is no dogmatic have-to list. It's, you know, a mixture of heart and head. I think that's great.
All right. See y'all in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Join us on the first and third Mondays of the month for magical tools, tips, and stories about living as a witch in today's world.
Find us at thatwitchlife.com for archived episodes or to ask your burning questions.